21st Century Radio is sponsored by Hieronymus & Company. This is Talk Radio 680 WCBM. It's time now for award-winning 21st Century Radio. Here's your host, Dr. Bob Hieronymus.
Abracadabra. Make Professor Paul H. Trattner appear at your next event. As a professed artist of legerdemain, he will amaze, amuse, and astound you and your guests with his magical entertainment and subtle humor. For more information, visit his website at www.professortrattner.com or call the magic number 410-664-6240. That's 410-664-6240. Welcome back to 21st Century Radio and at Telesma, Baltimore Group. And, of course, that is one of the most important pieces I've ever heard dealing with Egyptian sun. Well, welcome back to 21st Century Radio. I'm the alleged Dr. Bob Hieronymus, a lowly PhD hanging out in this part of the universe. And sometimes we know where that is. And other times it seems to move around a bit as we move from one dimension to another. Our executive producer and research assistants, Laura Courtner, our engineer is Jake Bryant. Well, about 5 years ago, I received a very disturbing call from a researcher who was writing a book destroying the reputation of one of my heroes, Manly Palmer Hall, just as some previous books have been released sabotaging the work of Helena Blavatsky. I had corresponded with Manly Hall for at least 5 years in the early 70s, and our correspondence dealt with his books, The Secret Destiny of America and America's Assignment with Destiny. Obviously, I have great admiration for Manly Palmer Hall, and I was questioning him on some of the sources and some of his information. I needed information. That's right. Well, the researcher in question said he was granted access to my correspondence by the Philosophical Research Society and related that I had caused some embarrassing moments for my mentor, Manly Palmer Hall, and reviewed why I was never given answers to specific questions and why Manly Palmer Hall didn't get to those questions. And when I asked for specifics and my desire to see the questioned correspondence, the author refused to assist me. And this has gone on for several years, and I have been sadly waiting to read that particular work, and I hope it never gets published. However, while waiting to review the planned attack on Manly Palmer Hall, I was greatly pleased to learn of the republication of some of Manly Palmer Hall's most important works, two of which we are going to discuss this hour, first hour. And before we begin our review of Manly Palmer Hall's The Secret Destiny of America and America's Assignment with Destiny with Mitch Horowitz from the emails, emails that we've received, there is still great confusion on the upcoming interviews and shows that we've completed with the History and Discovery channels. And let's try to straighten it out again here. Concerning the two-hour production based on my book, United Symbols of America, the Discovery Channel plans to release America's Secrets by the end of January or the beginning of February 2009. Of course, all that can change. The two-hour production with the History Channel, based on our book United Symbols of America, will air in April 2009, and in early February we will begin another Canadian documentary on the Masonic symbols in Washington, D.C., which will be broadcasted late spring, early summer 2009. Also, our book Founding Fathers Secret Society, published in 2006, is now appearing in Germany, Spain, France, and Russia. And our book, United Symbols of America, is presently only published in English, but we understand that's going to be changed soon. Now, this hour's guest is Mitch Horowitz, the leading authority on the work of Manly Palmer Hall. Mitch Horowitz is a writer and publisher of many years' experience with a lifelong interest in man's search for meaning. Hot diggity dog, I can't think of a more important thing to do than study our search for meaning. He is the editor-in-chief of Torture Penguin in New York. He is completing a book, which I can't wait to read, called Occult America, The Secret History of How Mysticism Conquered America, forthcoming from Bantam Books. Welcome to 21st Century Radio, Mitch.
Thank you. Delighted to be here, Bob.
Well, I'm so glad you could make it.
And congratulations to you on your book, The United Symbolism of America. I've been reading it and just enjoying it immensely. The research is terrific.
Well, thank you. It's about 40 years' work, as you can probably
imagine.
because all of us make mistakes. I've made, maybe about 427, and you... Every time you work on something else, obviously you try to correct those things. But
yes, well, I can see a great deal of work went into your book, and sweat equity is what really matters in these books. You know, anybody can sit around and speculate and spin out theories and spend a lot of time online, but you can really smell it out when somebody has just checked and cross-checked, and I think that's what you've done in your book, and that's what all of us need to be doing.
Thank you very much. Now, Mitch, tell us, who was Manly Palmer Hall?
Manly Palmer Hall was born in a small rural city in Canada in the year 1901 in Ontario, Canada. His parents got divorced just around the time that he was being born, and he was raised by his grandmother in the American West. He spent some time in South Dakota. He didn't have much obvious education. He was sick much of the time as a kid, spent a lot of time in bed, spent a lot of time reading, spent a lot of time around adults, because you don't make many friends when you're a sickly, bookish child growing up in the American West. Somehow, astoundingly, at a very, very young age, after Manly had settled in the city of Los Angeles, he produced in 1928 a magnificent book that many of your listeners have heard of called The Secret Teachings of All Ages. And it is an absolutely magisterial encyclopedia of esoteric and occult philosophy. There's really never been anything like it. It's never been surpassed. And the astonishing thing about it, aside from the quality and the vastness of the book, is that its author was only 27 years old when he published it. And you can pore through this man's life and find no obvious earmarks, antecedents of how he was able to compile the scale of information that he did in that book. The book is a mystery. The book is a great work. And the fact that he was only 27 years old when he compiled it elevated him to a kind of a legendary proportion in the mind of his admirers. And he was really a very, very great scholar and a man of extraordinary accomplishment. He lived a long life, died in Los Angeles in 1990, produced thousands of books, pamphlets, essays, had an organization in Los Angeles, which we may talk about a little bit. But nothing surpasses the accomplishment of his production of The Secret Teachings of All Ages when he was 27 years old. So I guess you could say that Manly Hall was a great occult and esoteric scholar, but at least as something of a young man, he was a mystery himself.
Well, you were involved with the reissuing of this book in a more readable form. I haven't seen it, and obviously I want to get a chance to take a look at that, because I have maybe half a dozen of Secret Teachings of All Ages all marked up.
Yes.
except for the big ones, you know, the ones that
and they're expensive, too. You can't mark those up casually.
Yeah, I know. I mean, when you forget. I always had to have two of every book because one book gets decimated and the other, but his work is extraordinary. This is an extraordinary soul, but you were involved with having it reissued in a more readable form in 2004?
Yes, sir. 2003, actually.
Actually, 2003.
We call it the Secret Teachings of All Ages Reader's Edition.
Readers.
And it just came out of the idea that this very large, somewhat unwieldy book was being owned more than it was being read.
Yeah.
That people would procure it because it has such a legendary status. But the interior design is so dense and so difficult on the eye that it really could serve as a barrier to the reader. So I said to myself, what would happen if we sat down and we completely reset and redesigned this book unabridged as if we were starting over completely, not to replace the old editions, but to supplement them, to exist side by side with them. So we literally reset and redesigned the entire book. We did everything we could to bring very, very high production standards and aesthetic standards to it. This wasn't just a question of scanning something and resetting it into boring old type, but we really tried to give it the kind of epic design that Manly Hall would have wanted, but in a way that makes the unabridged text accessible. And we've been through close to 20 reprintings at this point.
Holy God, yeah, that's great.
It's been kind of a dream come true. So I feel that we've succeeded in bringing this reader's edition of The Secret Teachings to a whole new generation of people. It's one of the most gratifying things I've ever worked on in 20 years of publishing.
Well, thank heavens you did it, because, boy, I'm telling you, that was one of the biggest problems, was trying to read all of that miniature type.
Yes.
And of course,
I've said to people, it can be like reading a page of Babylonian Talmud.
Yes, that's really what it was like.
Yeah, it's very dense.
Like. Yeah. Oh, yes. Well, why did Manly Palmer Hall believe that the downgrading of all systems of idealistic philosophy, I guess you might say that's more along the lines of the perennial philosophy,
yes,
and the deeper aspects of comparative religion were such a great threat to planetary consciousness?
Well, you know, it's funny. When Manly Hall first began working on The Secret Teachings of All Ages, he was living in a time almost exactly like the one we're going through now. He completed this book just at the start of the Great Depression. He lived through the 1920s as a very young man, and he saw that American society had just become hell-bent on materialism. Procuring money had become the motivating principle of our society to a very great extent. And then the stock market crashed, and everything that everybody believed in, which was material success, seemed to come down around them. And he felt that we as a society, with exceptions, were becoming ethically illiterate, and that we were downgrading the religious systems, the ethical ideas, the philosophy of antiquity. It was being downgraded by scholars into a kind of very humdrum materialist philosophy that was taking out all the mystery. Manly Hall believed that there was an ancient perennial philosophy that was older than all of our religions, that was older than all of our ethical philosophies, and that saw man's inner development as being the highest aim of life. He believed that America was founded as a vessel for that inner development, but that the materialism of our society and the financial crash was blinding us to what we as a nation were really here to do. Not exclusively, but first and foremost. So he believed that idealistic philosophy was dying. His idea in writing The Secret Teachings of All Ages and his other books was to try to at least convince a small number of people that America's true mission was to serve as a vessel for man's inner development, not for material procurement.
Mm-hmm. Oh, boy. Well, he established... he did establish, didn't he, the Philosophical Research Society. I know he had help, but
yes.
He didn't do this by himself, but this is an extraordinary institution.
It is.
And it's just so fabulous. Why don't you tell us about it, please?
Well, after Manly Hall published The Secret Teachings of All Ages, he kind of became a boy wonder of esoteric studies, and he was able to attract a lot of benefactors. He had friends and connections within Freemasonry. He had he came to develop wealthy benefactors on the West Coast, and he was able to raise enough money to open a beautiful campus in the Griffith Park neighborhood of Los Angeles in 1934. He called this the Philosophical Research Society. It's still there. It's still as beautiful as ever. It is a small Art Deco Egyptian Mayan-style campus. It's a self-contained little world with a beautiful library, auditorium, bookstore, some classrooms, a vault where he kept some of his antiquities, many of which have been sadly sold off over the years. But the Philosophical Research Society is still there. It's open 6 or 7 days a week. It has kind of a legendary status within Los Angeles, and people travel from all over the country to visit it. Manly Hall, he had a lofty way of viewing things sometimes. He saw the Philosophical Research Society as being a kind of rebirth of a Pythagorean mystery school. I'm not sure it ever attained that status, but it became a really, really wonderful place for the independent study of esoteric ideas. And there's still a great deal of activity there. In fact, the current president of the Philosophical Research Society, Obadiah Harris, has created a master's degree study program there, which has received state and national accreditation. And that was something Manly Hall had hoped for toward the end of his life. So he founded what really endures as one of the first and the only esoteric master's studies programs in the country. And it's a lovely campus. I mean, it really looks like something that you're just not accustomed to seeing in this world. The style is Mayan, Egyptian, deco, and it's quite beautiful and easy to find in the Griffith Park area of Los Angeles.
Now, that library, I know it has books within it that Library of Congress certainly doesn't have.
And that's absolutely true. He collected alchemical manuscripts. He collected all kinds of ancient codexes, books of cryptograms. He has a vault on the premises where he kept a number of antiquities. I've had the blessing to be able to enter that vault, and there are many wonderful things there, but the tragedy is that when Hall died in 1990, the place got wrapped up in all kinds of lawsuits. There were a couple of con artists who had been trying to take advantage of Hall. His widow felt that the organization owed her money, and litigation just went flying. And whenever litigation goes flying, everybody loses, and everybody lost. Some lawyers got rich, but what happened was the legal debts were just so high after everything settled down that the organization was forced to sell off a number of its antiquities to the Getty Museum and to private collectors. So there are books of alchemical philosophy, books of occult philosophy, early printings of the Bible and other sacred works that had once been available in the library and in the vault, and they're no longer there because people went kind of crazy over money after Hall's death. It was exactly the kind of thing that he spent his life preaching against.
Yeah.
Fortunately, the organization is now under very responsible leadership, and they've returned to financial solvency. But those lawsuits took a big bite out of things at the time.
What an extraordinary organization from an extraordinary soul, and I'm certain he's going to be returning in a better package, the way Benjamin Franklin would publication. I'm just telling you, it's just amazing what this man had accomplished. And that's one of the reasons why I'm just hoping that the fool who has decided that he's going to be bringing down someone like this is as I hope the guy has nothing but bad luck.
Well,
now I apologize for that, friends, but it's the way I really feel. You know, this
yeah.
is the jealousy, the rage that I heard within this person's voice, the fact that he thought that he had knew of stuff that I was totally unaware of. I was aware of all that. Manly and I had no problem at all in discussing things that we didn't agree on. That's all. And that's
yes.
any great scholar allows it. It's, you know, they don't expect you to just swallow what they say.
That's right. Manly P. Hall was never afraid of debate. He believed in debate. He believed in transparency. And he also believed that two people could disagree and still be perfectly civil towards one another, still get along, still be colleagues and companions. The problem is people, what was it Emerson said, every institution is the shadow of one great man. You know, but the people that form the nucleus around these great men, they want to elevate them to a godlike status. They want to either, you know, project their image in such a way that would present them as a saint, or if they get disappointed in some way or another, they want to, you know, knock them down like an idol that let them down. But we have to see Manly Hall for who he was. He was a great scholar. He was an independent mind. And I have no doubt that you and he and many other people found many, many areas where they converged and agreed, and where they disagreed, that's part of what we're here for. We debate, we have transparency.
That's right, yeah. Well, we got to take our first break here of the hour with our guest, Mitch Horowitz, editor-in-chief of Tarcher Penguin and editor of the new edition of Manly Palmer Hall's The Secret Destiny of America and America's Assignment with Destiny. Go to Mitch Horowitz, HOROWITZ.com. MitchHorowitz.com. Researchers at Johns Hopkins are seeking volunteers with a current or past diagnosis of cancer who have anxiety or sadness about their cancer. Volunteers are needed to participate in a scientific study of self-exploration and personal meaning brought about by psilocybin, a psychoactive substance found in mushrooms, which has been used for centuries as a sacrament for religious and spiritual purposes. Volunteers enrolled in the study will receive careful preparation and two sessions in which they will receive psilocybin in a comfortable, supportive setting. Structured guidance will be provided during the session and afterwards to facilitate integration of the experiences. The study complies with FDA regulations. Volunteer must be between the ages of 21 and 70, have no personal history of severe psychiatric illness or recent history of alcoholism or drug abuse. To volunteer or more information, please call 410-550-5990 or visit cancer-insight.org. Confidentiality will be maintained for all applicants and participants. That's 410-550-5990 or www.cancer-insight.org.
Hello, this is Stanley Krippner. I'm professor of psychology at Sabre Graduate School in San Francisco on behalf of 21st Century Radio, run by Dr. Bob Hieronymus. And I would certainly encourage listeners to stay tuned, because you will hear things on 21st Century Radio that you'll hear nowhere else on the airwaves.
Welcome back to 21st Century Radio with our guest, Mitch Horowitz, editor-in-chief of Tarcher Penguin and the editor of the new edition of Manly Palmer Hall's. You know what we used to call Manly Palmer Hall? Miles per hour. That's what we did. Yeah, such a good sense of humor. The Secret Destiny of America and America's Assignment with Destiny. Mitch Horowitz, HOROWITZ.com. Mitch, tell us... How did Manly Palmer Hall see the democratic tradition preserved by secret societies?
Well, Manly Hall believed that secret societies were formed during the Reformation and in earlier ages to avoid church persecution. He believed that Europe at a certain point became almost a kind of religious police state, where the church sought to insert itself as an intermediary between the individual and the search for truth. So people with democratic and ecumenical ideas sometimes went underground. They sometimes formed secret societies. They might have called themselves Rosicrucians. They might have called themselves Freemasons. They had some other associations. And he believed that the ideas that these secret societies sought to preserve were not malevolent ideas. These were not conspiratorial ideas in some negative sense. They were very humanistic ideas. They were ideas that extolled the cause of human liberty. And he believed that through the currents of the Reformation and the Enlightenment, a lot of these ideas traveled the trade routes to America, and that many of the people who founded this country, he refers again and again to Washington and Franklin, both of whom were Freemasons. Not all the founding fathers were, but those were two associations. That through these figures who wrote our Constitution, wrote our Declaration of Independence, you find principles that had gone underground and had been protected in secret societies in Europe during the 1500s, during the 1600s. these ideas and principles, as he saw it, blossomed in America. America was a country that was seen as a protector of religious liberty and of the spiritual search, and that is the secret destiny of America.
Yep, indeed. He was a visionary, he knew about the importance of Enlightenment, Age of Enlightenment, and separation of church and state, because many of us would still be suffering from that same particular problem. As a matter of fact, we almost did this past 8 years.
That's right.
We were literally cut off from science, and I think that was a major mistake, obviously.
Yes.
Now, what was the new identity? Because when I say he was a visionary, here's another area in which he was extraordinary. The only person I was reading at the time, about 40 years ago, that said Christopher Columbus has a new identity.
Yes.
And right now we're in the midst of just this information coming out concerning the virus. Could you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, you know, it's extraordinary. I mean, here Christopher Columbus is one of the most formative figures in the history of the modern West, and we can't even figure out his birthday. These people become so familiar to us through the repeat referencing of their name, through their pictures in the encyclopedia, through this exhibit or that exhibit in a museum, that we come to believe, well, we understand, you know, Christopher Columbus, born in Genoa, you know, sailed the ocean blue in 1492, and we repeat these things as if they tell us the whole story. But the fact is, we're not actually sure of Christopher Columbus's lineage, whether he was Genoese, whether he was Greek. We're not entirely sure of his parentage. We're not entirely sure of his birthday, of his political connections, of his religious affiliations. There's some scholarship that points to the fact that he might have been a Morano, which is a Spaniard of Jewish descent who had to hide his Judaism from the Inquisition. There are questions about whether he belonged to some of the secret societies, if we want to put it that way, that we were just talking about. Christopher Columbus is a very unknown man to us. You know, we know the name, and we can identify some of the names of the ships and the dates and so on and so forth, but he is a figure about whom we know very little. Manly Hall in The Secret Destiny of America asks some questions about whether Columbus had imbibed some of these ideas that went underground in Europe, and whether he was much more than a tradesman with a lust for travel, but he was a kind of ambassador of Freemasonic and other ideas of religious liberty that he had hoped to bring to the New World. Now, when you read about Christopher Columbus in The Secret Destiny of America, you know, Manly Hall raises more questions than he does present answers. But what he does do, Hall's writing serves a very important purpose in that it highlights the fact that we actually know very, very little about this most familiar figure, Christopher Columbus, who we learn about from, you know, grade school on. He's a figure of mystery.
No doubt, but one of the things that I just loved about his work was his discussion of his cipher, of Christopher Columbus' cipher, and lo and behold, within recent years, books have come out on the Codex 632.
Yes.
And others, not just that one, but others, which basically have, they claim, I've been able to crack this particular cipher. And again, Manly Palmer Hall was excellent in the area of cryptology and cryptograms and that
yes.
type of thing. Only a man of that kind of vision. Now, remember, friends, this is 1928 and a little later on in the 40s and the 30s and the 40s and the 50s when he revealed a lot of this material. Now there are books coming out on Christopher Columbus in China in
yes.
1431. You know, I remember when I first tried to discuss this material with the various professors, and they just...
Oh, there's no room for it. You can't mention Manly Hall on a college campus.
Oh, I know. And you know, that's one of the major reasons why it took a long time for me to decide, well, I think I better work on my PhD, because after succumbing to all that other BS... and undergraduate school, et cetera, then I felt, oh, my God, I don't want to keep learning this stuff. Well, Bacon's Secret Society, Sir Francis Bacon's Secret Society, he says, how was Bacon's Secret Society set up in America? I have the highest, obviously, regard for Sir Francis Bacon and used to own several hundred of his various books dealing with his ciphers and codes.
Well, this is probably one of the most controversial aspects of Manly Hall's career. Francis Bacon wrote a utopian parable in the early 1600s called The New Atlantis. And lots of different people embrace this book as some feel that it's a religious vision of God's kingdom on earth. Years ago, people felt it was a prototype work of socialism for the kind of utopian economic society man could create on earth. Manly Hall believed that this was nothing less, Bacon's work, The New Atlantis, was nothing less than a blueprint for a society based on liberty and education that Bacon and his compatriots believed could be founded in the New World. Manly Hall believed that, in a sense, The New Atlantis was a cryptogram. It was a codex. It was a book of symbolism that laid out the plans for the democratic secret societies and philosophies that Bacon and his compatriots like Sir Walter Raleigh hoped would unfold in America. Now, Manly Hall's wife,
Maria Bauer?
Yes, Marie Bauer. She wrote a very rare book called Foundations Unearthed, and she believed that here in America, in the town of Williamsburg, Virginia, a vault had been created that buried Francis Bacon's manuscripts, blueprints, essentially all of his plans for the kind of great society that would be founded in America. Marie Bauer and her closest followers believed that this Bacon vault could be found on the grounds of a church called the Bruton Parish, which is an Episcopal parish, in Williamsburg, Virginia. And she and some of her colleagues, over a course of many years, conducted occasional digs on the grounds of this Bruton Parish. In the 1990s, a couple of followers of her ideas were arrested and, I believe, prosecuted for trespassing on the grounds of this church where they were conducting what amounted to an illegal dig. The Bruton Parish, they're just an Episcopal church that sees themselves as in the business of saving souls, and they don't seem to want anything to do with any of this. Mm-hmm. But she did write about this and did pinpoint this parish as a place where she felt the Bacon vault was buried. So that has been the subject of a lot of controversy, some legal action, some charges of trespassing. For me, it's less important whether there is a Bacon vault and whether anybody ought to, you know, go get out a map and a shovel and start digging for it. The point is, Manly Hall believed that you could find within the works of Francis Bacon a vision of a good society, and that society traveled on the trade routes to America. And he believes, again, that you'll find within Bacon the blueprint for what he calls the secret destiny of America.
Well, we're going to take our final break at this hour and give away a copy of the book that we're talking about tonight. Our guest is Mitch Horowitz, editor-in-chief of Tarcher Penguin. Hey, I wonder how's Jeremy Tarcher?
You know, he's doing well. He lives in Los Angeles. Jeremy Tarcher founded this company in the 1970s. He was a visionary of New Age Publishing. He'll be very glad to hear that you asked for him.
Well, yes, indeed. I remember his coming on our show a couple of times. This was really wonderful. That was about 1988.
Yeah.
Oh, my God, 21 years ago he joined. I forgot what I was doing. We got to get over this break here. Okay, Mitch Horowitz, editor-in-chief of Tarcher Penguin, and the editor of the new edition of Manly Palmer Hall's Secret Destiny of America and America's Assignment with Destiny. Mitch Horowitz, HOROWITZ.com.
Thank you. Zoe Hieronymus here. Do you ever wonder how biblical women dealt with stress? They experienced famine, war, lack of water, shortage of shelter, and inequality in their culture overall. But somehow, the seven prophetesses of Israel all rose to great leadership as a warrior, midwife, judge, royal queen, and more. Find out how you can be a queen. Kabbalah gives us all the tools for becoming the most we can be. Learn how to create peace in your life and love of others in your heart. Read my book, The Kabbalistic Teachings of the Female Prophets, The Seven Holy Women of Ancient Israel. Visit www.sevenholywomen.com. That's www.sevenholywomen.com. Or visit amazon.com to get my book, The Kabbalistic Teachings of the Female Prophets.
This is George Norrie.
Is this George Norrie?
Is this you, Robert?
Yeah, this is partly me.
Also, Bob, before I leave, I wanted to thank you for the contribution you've made to all of us in this country, for the format that you've given us for years, way longer than me. And without you around, we wouldn't be the same.
Thank you. I'm speechless. Yeah, I was speechless. Well, indeed. Oh, my heavens. You heard from the Queen. And your Queen, as a matter of fact, you should have seen Ziggy Marley after he took a look at Zahara's book, Kabbalistic Teachings of the Female Prophets, and Barnes & Noble, and Mountain Girl, you know, she was the wife of Jerry Garcia, blew her mind wide open. Willie Nelson liked it. I like it even more. However, our guest at this time is Mitch Horowitz, editor-in-chief of Torture Penguin and editor of the new edition of Manly Palmer Hall's The Secret Destiny of America and America's Assignment with Destiny, MitchHorowitz.com. Oh, Mitch, we need another hour to. I knew it. Okay. But anyway, we'll do the best we can with what we got here. Now, there are two questions. There are two particular points that I kept asking him about, because I'm a Virgo, and that's a sickness. I understand. We just like to. We like to get things.
My mother is a Virgo.
Well, you know what I'm talking about then. You know, you try to get it as perfect as you can. Tell us about the unknown man who designed the American flag. Now, of course, this isn't documented, but I thought it was important.
You know, this is the kind of thing that Manly Hall would write about in a very earnest and upfront way. And he would say, look, folks, this is speculative history. This is undocumented history, as you said. But he felt that the information should at least be out there so people knew that this was part of the founding mythos of America. There is a book, very, very rare book, that was published in 1890 called Our Flag by a man named Robert Allen Campbell. And in that book, Campbell has what Hall felt was a very, very vivid account of an unknown figure, a professor, a master of ancient manuscripts, cryptograms, mystical philosophies, who befriended Benjamin Franklin and others, other contemporaries of his, and counseled them on the design of the American flag. And then this figure, this character, was lost to history. There was something about the verisimilitude of the account that touched Manly P. Hall, and he wrote about it many, many years ago. I think he first wrote about it in 1942 in his journal Horizon. And then he revisited the theme in The Secret Destiny of America a few years later. And the thing I love about Manly Hall is he had the capacity to write about a story like that, this mysterious stranger who met and influenced Benjamin Franklin and was lost to history. He could write about it for four or five pages, say, look, folks, you know, this is just some degree of speculation here, but there's some kernel of intelligence to it, so we're going to talk about it briefly, and then he could just move on. He knew how to distinguish the fine from the coarse that way. So it's an interesting chapter for people to read about. And Hall doesn't make any claims beyond what material is available to him.
Well, I just love those stories. I wanted them to be true because
yeah.
they just touched my heart. Then, and I also know, excuse me just a second, please. I also know from my limited experience with others and the esoteric tradition, such as Paul Foster Case.
Yes.
And how Paul Foster Case, literally, because I was in communication with his wife, Harriet.
Oh, that's good.
And Harriet told me the story of Paul Foster Case meeting his teacher,
in an elevator in New York City.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I know this kind of thing happens.
Mm-hmm.
The reason why I know this happens is because on a much smaller level, my experiences also have taken place up in New York City, in elevators and places like that, right out of the blue. I gave a lecture one time. It was linked to the United Nations, and before you know it, I'm traveling in an elevator with a man who gave me an old signature of an old Masonic, and I just couldn't believe it. And there it was. So those things happen. They really do.
Yes.
But of course, they just sound like stories, and you have no proof for them. But I just love those stories because there's another one on the unknown man who swayed the signers of the Declaration of Independence. I almost cried when I read that one because there are other beings that aren't necessarily physical, and they really could be there.
Yes.
No historian's going to accept that.
No historian will accept it. And yet these stories are important. I think of them as American apocrypha. They may not be provable, but within them are principles that we feel are true, are principles that point to something higher.
Yep.
And I think they're worth reading.
Yeah, I do believe that's true. Now, also, in regards to the Great Seal, how is the Great Seal related to the Order of the Quest?
Well, you know, I very much like the material that you read on the Great Seal in your new book, because I think you take a very respectful and sober and hard-headed approach to the question of Masonic connections, secret society connections to the Great Seal. And the fact is, there's no direct connection, which I think you point out very well in your book. But there's a philosophical connection, that what we see in the Great Seal and that beautiful Latin expression that surrounds it, annuit coeptis novos ordo seclorum, is the idea that a new good society is being born here, and we're wishing for the providence for providence to smile on it, essentially. The founding fathers saw, at least I think insofar as their idealistic philosophy went, the founding fathers saw the material world as being incomplete without man's inner development, without the blessing of providence. And that, I believe, is exactly what we're seeing expressed on the back of the dollar bill with the incomplete pyramid topped by what may be the all-seeing eye of God. It's this idea that the material world is not all there is. What we see is not all there is. We're building a great edifice here, but that edifice cannot be completed without the capstone of something higher. That is a kind of philosophy that ran through the Rosicrucian manuscripts, that ran through the most radical schools of thought that came out of the Reformation, that ran through Freemasonry. It's not an accident that we see that in the ideas of the founding fathers. You know, it's a situation where we can't necessarily trace down the forensics of the symbol with any certainty, but we can find the philosophical chords that symbol vibrates to. And that symbol vibrates to the philosophical chords that you find within certain aspects of Rosicrucian writing, within the most radical edges of the Reformation. So there's a reason why that symbol attracts our attention. It's a very powerful symbol, and it embodies very beautiful ideas.
Well, you did a beautiful job on the front cover of Secret Destiny of America. I mean, and putting the reverse of the Great Seal in color against the weathered, almost, well, it's kind of weathered looking piece of parchment. And I love the spine.
Thank you.
That spine, again, with the miniature pyramid in the eye and the triangle in color, just gorgeous.
Yeah.
Just gorgeous. I mean,
Thank you.
There is no, friends, there is no other. When you see the reverse of the Great Seal on the back of the dollar bill, that, in my opinion, is one of the most beautiful etchings of it. But what was done here on the cover of this book is that it was colorized.
Yeah.
And it is fabulous. It's just fabulous. And because the guy that obviously designed this particular logo, our Great Seal, Mr. Weeks, he was also a Freemason. Now, that's as 1935. That's not the beginning of 1782 to 1776. But it's just extraordinary. I love looking at that spine. And I'm sorry I wasted so much time on that, but being an artist, I can't help it.
No, I appreciate it. I mean, we've really tried to repackage Manly Hall's books as if they're being published for the first time today.
Well, he loves this. I can just tell. I mean, he's around. You know he's around. He must have been around you.
I knock on wood. I mean, I'll tell you, when the complete manuscript of The Secret Teachings of All Ages, we reset the entire manuscript, as I mentioned earlier. When that arrived on my desk, it stood almost 2 feet high, and just a shiver went through me to feel that I was looking at a book back in manuscript form that was so mysterious and such an epic of history and scholarship. I got a few chills while I was working on that.
Yeah, I bet you did. I bet you did. It was, you know, it's the kind of work that reminds me of some of the experiences of... you sound like one of Sir Francis Bacon's secretaries. I mean, you know how many he had? Yeah, 60?
Yeah.
He was dictating all the time. Well, okay, I've got one more question. And tell us a little bit about the German Pietists of Pennsylvania, because this is another particular topic that Manly Hall has opened up for all of us.
Yeah, I appreciate that. He writes beautifully about the German Pietists. I think there's one area where he loses sight of something, but to put it in a nutshell, the German Pietists were a group of very devout, mystical Lutherans who traveled from the Germanic-speaking regions of Europe that had been just devastated in the 30 Years' War by the mid-1600s. And many of these people were people of mystical inclination who fled these very demolished lands that the 30 Years' War had just laid waste to.
Well, unfortunately, we're not going to have time to get to the rest of that answer, friends. You're going to have to get a copy of this book, Secret Destiny of America, by Tartar Penguin. And thank you for joining us, Mitch. I look forward to reviewing your upcoming book, Occult America. I understand it's going to be out in September 2009.
Yes.
It's called Occult America, The Secret History of How Mysticism Conquered America from Bantam. Very unique, unique stuff. Congratulations.
Thank you, and I'll give the full answer to your question in the book Occult America, which is out in September.
Thank you. Hang in there. We'll be right back. Next hour, we'll be joined by James Wasserman to discuss his just released The Secrets of Masonic Washington, a guidebook to the signs, symbols, and ceremonies at the origin of America's capital, courtesy of Destiny Books. It is your destiny.
Powerful names in talk on Talk Radio 680 WCBM, Baltimore.
From ABC News,